Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. Imagine for a second that you are installing this, I don't know, $1 million state-of-the-art vault door at the front of your business.
Right. Maximum security.
Exactly. You feel totally secure. But, you left the master key just tucked neatly right under the welcome mat.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It gets worse, right? Because the security guard that you hired to watch the cameras, he's actually a sleeper agent working for the people who are trying to rob you.
That is a very grim picture.
It is, but welcome to today's deep dive.
Yeah.
Today, we are taking a really hard look at the modern attack lifecycle, but we're doing it specifically from the perspective of the defender.
Right.
We have this stack of recent, highly actionable threat intelligence covering three distinct campaigns. And the overarching theme here is, well, it's a harsh reality check. Modern attackers aren't just breaking our defenses anymore. They are weaponizing our own safety nets against us.
Yeah, and our own default settings too. It is a profound shift in the threat landscape. I mean, we are going to trace a compromise today from the very beginning.
Starting at the front door.
Starting right at the perimeter,
Yeah.
exactly. And then moving into internal development infrastructure and finally examining this level and deep invisible entrenchment that just, well, it defies almost everything we think we know about malware.
Yeah, it really does.
So for anyone listening who is tasked with keeping a network secure, the insights from this intelligence, they're going to challenge some deeply held assumptions about how we detect intrusions.
Absolutely. So let's start at that perimeter, the front door.
Yeah.
The intelligence here details this massive campaign that researchers are tracking as Mirage 2FA. And this has been active from 2024 straight through 2026. So this isn't just a couple of isolated incidents. This is a commercial phishing as a service toolkit.
Right, squarely targeting Microsoft 365 environments.
Yeah. And the scale of the telemetry we're seeing here is just staggering. Mirage 2FA has impacted over 4,500 unique company domains.
Wow.
And while the data shows a heavy concentration in the United States, I think it was nearly 64% of the victims, this is undeniably a global operation.
Yeah, they're hitting sectors like tech, manufacturing, education, all across India, Singapore, the UK, Saudi Arabia, South Africa. It's everywhere.
It really is. And the success rate is what really caught my eye here.
Yeah.
The researchers at ANYR Rouen, they analyzed over 9,000 compromise events tied to this specific toolkit.
Okay.
And they found that nearly half of the targeted email addresses were potentially compromised.
That's a huge hit rate.
Right. But the part that requires us to really dig into the mechanics is the name itself, Mirage 2FA. It is specifically built to completely sidestep two-factor authentication,
Right.
which is wild because we've spent, what, the last decade telling everyone that 2FA is the ultimate shield against credential theft?
Oh, absolutely. It was the gold standard.
Yeah. So how are they just walking right past it?
Well, we have to unpack what this toolkit is actually doing under the hood. It's fundamentally an adversary in the middle attack, or ATM.
Okay, an ATM proxy.
Exactly. Because historically, phishing involved creating a fake login page,
Yeah.
and you just sort of hoped the user types in their password, right?
Right, and then you save that password to a database.
Yeah. But if that user has 2FA enabled, a stolen password on its own is basically useless.
Because you still need the code from their phone.
Precisely. So Mirage 2FA doesn't just host a static fake page, it dynamically proxies the connection in real time.
Okay, let's unpack this. So the attacker server sits directly between the victim and Microsoft.
Right.
The victim connects to the attacker, and then the attacker opens a live connection to Microsoft.
Exactly. So when the victim types their password, the attacker forwards it instantly. Microsoft sees the password, says okay, and then prompts for the 2FA code.
Like a push notification to your phone or a text message.
Microsoft sends that prompt. The attacker relays it to the victim's screen.
Oh, I see.
So the victim approves the login on their phone, thinking they are dealing directly with Microsoft.
Right, because it's happening in real time.
Right. Microsoft then validates the login and issues the cryptographic proof of authentication, which is the session cookie.
Wait, I think I see where this is going. It sounds almost like a bouncer at a really exclusive club.
Okay, yeah.
So the bouncer checks your ID, checks your face, and once you pass all the security checks, they hand you a VIP wristband. Mirage 2FA isn't trying to forge a fake ID to trick the bouncer. They're just letting the bouncer clear you, and then they pickpocket the VIP wristband right off your arm.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. That session cookie is the VIP wristband.
Wow.
Once the attacker intercepts that cookie, they cut the victim's connection. Usually, they just redirect them to a fake error page.
So the user just thinks, oh, the website is broken.
Exactly. And meanwhile, the attacker injects that stolen cookie into their own browser. Microsoft 365 looks at the connection, sees the valid cookie, and just grants them full access.
No password needed.
No password, no 2FA token. They bypass the front door completely because the system believes they are already inside.
Which means if an organization gets hit by this, traditional responses just do not work.
No, they don't.
Because if I'm a security engineer and I see suspicious activity on an account, my first instinct is to force a password reset for that user.
But right, that's the standard playbook.
But based on how you just explained that session cookie, resetting the password wouldn't actually do anything, would it?
It would be completely ineffective for terminating that active threat.
Because they already have the wristband.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The attacker already holds the authenticated session. Changing the lock on the door doesn't help if they are already sitting in your living room.
That is terrifying.
This is why defenders have to shift their mindset from, you know, just password theft to treating this as a full-blown identity incident. To stop this, you have to revoke all active sessions for the user, not just change the password.
But ideally, we want to stop them before they even get the cookie, right?
Okay.
How do we defend against a dynamic proxy?
Well, the actionable defense here relies on integrating automated sandboxing directly into the SOC's daily workflows.
Okay.
Because Mirage 2FA operates in real time, it relies heavily on WebSockets.
And WebSockets are, they're like a continuous open line of communication.
Right. It's a technology that allows for continuous two-way communication between the victim's browser and the attacker's server.
Okay, so it's not just a one-off request.
Exactly. So by detonating suspicious links in a secure sandbox environment first, security teams can monitor for that specific WebSocket activity.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, they can look for recurring loaders, encoded data streams, all the things that characterize that proxy behavior.
So you catch it before the user even types anything in.
Right. And ANILIRUNS data indicates that using these early stage behavioral markers to catch the attack before the user completes the flow can cut the mean time to respond by 21 minutes per case.
And 21 minutes in the middle of a widespread phishing campaign?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lifetime.
It really is.
It's the difference between a contained alert and a catastrophic breach. Okay, so let's follow the attacker's path. They've stolen the VIP wristband.
Yep.
They are inside the corporate environment. Mm. But an attacker doesn't just want to read your emails, right? They want the crown jewels.
Always.
So where do they go next? They start hunting for internal infrastructure, specifically development tools. And that leads us to a critical vulnerability in a platform called Gitea.
Right. So Gitea is an incredibly popular self-hosted Git service.
Basically like a private GitHub.
Exactly. You can think of it as a private internal version of GitHub that enterprise engineering teams use to manage their source code.
Okay.
The vulnerability in question here is CVE-2026-6004, and it carries a CVSS severity score of 9.8 out of 10.
9.8. I mean, that is a drop everything you are doing and wake up the engineering team level of severity.
Yeah, absolutely. It has already been added to CISA's known exploited vulnerabilities catalog.
And this isn't some obscure flaw affecting a legacy build nobody uses either.
No.
The intelligence notes it impacts all versions from 1.1 set up to 1.27.0, meaning almost a year's worth of recent releases were wide open before it was patched in 1.27.1.
Yeah, it was discovered by a security researcher named Shyrod.
Okay, but let's dive into the mechanics here. Why does a flaw in a code repository get a near-perfect severity score?
Because it allows for remote code execution. Or RCE.
The holy grail for attackers.
Right. And it happens through an API endpoint called diffpatch. To understand the impact, we have to look at a native Git feature called a Git hook.
Okay. What is that normally used for?
Well, in normal development, a Git hook is just an automated script. For example, a developer pushes code, and a hook automatically runs a script to check if the code is formatted correctly before accepting it.
So it's meant to execute commands on the underlying server to help manage the repository.
Exactly. It's a very helpful feature. But this vulnerability allows an attacker to manipulate that diffpatch endpoint to plant their own executable Git hook, constructed entirely from content they control.
Oh, no.
Yeah. When that hook triggers, it doesn't check code formatting. It executes arbitrary shell commands on the hosting server.
Running with the same privileges as the Gitea application itself.
Exactly. They achieve complete server compromise.
And we have documented proof of this happening in the wild, right?
We do.
The source's detail and analysis published by a full-stack developer named Andre on the tech platform Hab.
Right. He goes by Kozlov.
Yeah. He was running a self-hosted Gitea instance on a provider called HostKey. But he didn't find out he was compromised because of some sophisticated intrusion detection system firing an alert?
No, not at all.
He found out because his hosting provider sent him a billing email saying they were throttling his virtual server for pinning the CPU at over 70% capacity.
Yeah, the attackers used the RCE to drop a payload that functioned like a cryptocurrency miner.
Just maximizing the server's resources.
Exactly, and they executed this entirely over HTTPS, completely bypassing the need for SSH access to the server.
Okay, here is where it gets really interesting. And I have to push back a bit on the narrative we often hear about these, you know, sophisticated, highly technical cyber attacks.
Okay, go ahead.
The code injection via the diffpatch endpoint is nasty, yes.
Very.
But to even reach that endpoint, the advisory clearly states the attacker must have write access to a repository.
Right, they have to be an authenticated user.
Exactly. They need permissions to manipulate code.
Yeah.
So how are external attackers getting write access to private enterprise development servers in the first place?
That is the crucial question, and the answer is frankly alarming. According to the default configuration of Gitea during those versions, open registration is enabled right out of the box.
Wait, open registration, meaning anyone on the internet who finds the server can just click sign up, create a brand new user account, spin up a new repository, and instantly grant themselves the write access needed to trigger the exploit.
Yes.
You're kidding.
No, it's true. Andre noted in his postmortem that his Gitea SSH port wasn't even exposed to the public internet.
Right.
But because open registration was left on, an unauthenticated visitor simply browsed to the HTTPS portal, registered an account, and launched the shell commands.
So we aren't really dealing with some insurmountable nation-state level hacking technique here.
No.
This is a catastrophic failure of default configurations. It goes right back to that vault door analogy we started with.
Yeah, it really does.
You install this robust internal source control system, but by leaving open registration on, you've left the master key under the welcome mat for absolutely anyone walking by.
It highlights a massive blind spot in how organizations deploy internal tools. Because the true enabler of the exploit wasn't just the memory or the code flaw.
Right.
It was the intended functionality of the application working exactly as configured.
That is wild.
So the defender action here is twofold. The immediate action is obvious, you know, pass your Gitea servers to version 1.27.1 right now.
Obviously.
But the strategic action is much broader. Defenders must systematically audit the default configurations of all self-hosted infrastructure.
Because attackers aren't just looking for broken code, right? They're looking for logical shortcuts.
Exactly.
If an internal wiki or a dev environment or a staging server doesn't absolutely require public account creation, you have to disable it. Lock down the welcome mats. Okay, so we've seen the attacker bypass the 2FA bouncer at the front door by stealing a cookie.
Mm.
We've seen them stroll right into the internal network and gain server-level execution because of a default setting on a Git server.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, they have deep access. Now, how do they ensure they never lose it? If a defender discovers the crypto miner and kicks them out, how do they guarantee they can quietly slide right back in?
Well, they ensure persistence by hiding inside the very tools designed to hunt them.
Oh, this is the craziest part of the intelligence.
It really is. This brings us to a previously unreported, highly advanced Windows backdoor that researchers have dubbed Sleepwalker.
Sleepwalker.
Yeah, and the documentation on this comes from Dominic Reichel, an independent malware researcher formerly with Palo Alto Networks Unit 42. And the technical elegance of this implant is genuinely unsettling.
Unsettling is the right word for it. The footprint is incredibly tiny. The source notes that Sleepwalker is a 64-bit Windows Dynamic Link Library, or DLL.
Right.
It is completely unsigned, and it weighs in at just 59,904 bytes.
So small.
But the way it uses those bytes is a masterclass in stealth. It is specifically engineered to be sideloaded into a process called eRegent.exe.
Which is the legitimate executable for the ESET management agent. That is a widely used enterprise antivirus and security platform.
Okay, so to understand why this is so dangerous, can you explain how Windows handles DLL search order?
Sure. So when an executable like the ESET agent launches, it needs to load various external libraries into memory to function,
yeah,
right?
It needs its dependencies.
Exactly. But Windows doesn't always know exactly where those files are located, so it follows a specific hierarchy to find them.
Okay.
It usually checks the directory where the executable itself is located first before it moves on to system folders like System32.
So if an attacker can drop a malicious file right into the ESET folder, and they give it the exact name of a legitimate library that ESET is programmed to look for.
Windows will happily load the malicious one into the antivirus agent's memory first. Yeah, it's called DLL hijacking or sideloading. In this case, Sleepwalker impersonates a core Microsoft cryptography library called dpoppy.dll.
And ESET just accepts it.
Well, to ensure ESET doesn't crash when it loads the fake library, Sleepwalker is programmed to export the exact same 7 data protection functions as the real Microsoft library.
Oh, that's clever.
It even copies the version resource metadata from the ESET agent to blend in visually, you know, if a human analyst is just looking at the folder.
So it looks completely normal.
Completely normal.
But the disguise isn't even the most terrifying part. It hears what it does once it's running inside the memory of the security agent. When I read this part of the intelligence, I literally had to read it twice.
I don't blame you.
There are no command and control domains hard-coded into this file. There are no IP addresses, no URLs. It makes absolutely zero outbound connections to the internet.
None, which means it generates absolutely no network telemetry for a traditional firewall or intrusion detection system to flag.
Right, so how does it get its instructions?
The entire payload is locked behind an embedded configuration that is encrypted using AES-256 CCM.
And for our listeners, that is military-grade symmetric encryption with built-in authentication.
Right.
Meaning if anyone messes with it, it fails to decrypt entirely.
Exactly. But when it finally does decrypt in memory, it unravels into a single solitary instruction.
Just one.
Just one. Watch all network interfaces indefinitely.
Yeah.
It drops the network interface into promiscuous mode, allowing it to passively sniff every single packet crossing the wire. It doesn't ask for instructions, it just waits. It is listening for one specially crafted trigger packet to arrive.
And the payload inside that trigger packet, it isn't written in PowerShell or Python or any known language.
No.
It's written in a custom 23 instruction bytecode language created by the attacker.
Yeah.
Even if a threat hunter somehow recovers the encryption key and decrypts the back door, they just find opcodes that don't exist anywhere else in the world. You can't reverse engineer the commands because the language itself is alien.
Right. And the implications of that passive, promiscuous listening are profound.
How so?
Because it watches every network interface, it doesn't even need the trigger packet to be addressed to the machine it is infecting.
Right. Really?
Really. If an advanced threat actor deploys Sleepwalker on a network gateway or a VPN server or a host bridging two secure network segments, the backdoor can sit quietly and capture a trigger packet that was destined for a completely different IP address.
So what does this all mean? It really is like a sleeper cell agent infiltrating a police station.
That's a great analogy.
Right. They sit quietly at the dispatcher's desk, which in this scenario is ESET, the very software meant to protect you.
Right.
They export those 7 legitimate functions, so they look exactly like a real police officer just sitting there doing paperwork.
Yep.
They make 0 outbound phone calls. They just sit there, staring at the radio, waiting to hear a specific, untranslatable burst of static that tells them to wake up and execute arbitrary commands.
It is the ultimate post-compromise implant. Reichel's analysis points out that this methodology is highly consistent with a targeted, extremely well-resourced operation.
I mean, it would have to be.
Yeah. It doesn't bother checking the digital signature of the host process, only the name. And it doesn't try to elevate its own privileges because it relies on inheriting the massive system-level privileges already granted to the ESET antivirus agent.
Which implies something critical about how it gets there in the first place.
It does.
To drop a fake DLL into the ESET installation directory, the attacker already needed local administrator rights.
Right. This is strictly post-compromise. We don't have telemetry on how the operators initially breached the machines. You know, perhaps a stolen session cookie like Mirage 2FA, perhaps an exploited development server like Gitea.
Sure.
But once they secure admin rights, deploying Sleepwalker ensures they have a permanent, invisible backdoor.
So if I'm a defender and I manage to somehow find this untranslatable, silent backdoor hiding in my antivirus, what is the action? My instinct is to just quarantine the DLL and delete it.
Well, if you do that, you're still compromised.
What? Why?
The reality of defending against an implant like this is grim. There is nothing to patch.
Wait, what do you mean nothing to patch?
Sleepwalker does not exploit a flaw in ESET's code.
Oh, because of the Windows search order.
Exactly. While ESET and other products like, you know, Kaspersky's reports on the Toddycat group have been abused for sideloading before, this technique relies entirely on the intended fundamental design of the Windows operating system's DLL search order.
The OS is literally just doing what it was programmed to do.
Exactly. Therefore, the only viable defender response to confirming a sleepwalker infection is full incident response and a complete bare metal system rebuild.
Because you have no way of knowing what that custom bytecode actually did while it was awake.
Precisely. You don't know what credentials it scraped, what configurations it altered, or what other lateral movement it facilitated. If you just delete the DLL, you leave behind an environment that has been manipulated by an invisible hand. You have to burn it down and start over.
You have to burn it down. That is a sobering reality to arrive at, but I mean, that is exactly why we analyze these campaigns, right?
Yeah.
To get to the ground truth of what networks are actually up against.
Absolutely.
So to summarize today's deep dive for everyone listening, first, watch your session cookies.
Yep.
2FA is an essential tool, but it is not a silver bullet against dynamic adversary in the middle proxies like Mirage 2FA. You must integrate sandboxing into your workflows to catch those WebSockets early.
That's right.
Second, audit your default configurations. Don't build a fortress and leave the master key under the welcome mat for internal tools like Gataea.
Turn off open registration.
Exactly. And finally, recognize that your most trusted, highly privileged security agents can be hijacked to provide deep, silent persistence, as we saw with Sleepwalker.
It demands an evolution in how we view trust within our own perimeters and a willingness to constantly question the foundational assumptions of our security architectures.
Absolutely. By understanding the granular mechanics of these attacks, we all become more capable, more resilient defenders.
And before we wrap up, I want to leave everyone with a broader concept to mull over, building on the reality of that sleepwalker implant.
Okay, let's hear it.
If highly resourced attackers are now deploying malware that makes absolutely zero outbound network connections, utilizes untranslatable custom byte card, and hides flawlessly inside the memory of our own trusted antivirus agents, does this mean the traditional cybersecurity model of detecting bad behavior is fundamentally becoming obsolete?
Oh.
Moving forward, do defenders have to assume they are fully silently compromised at all times, shifting their organizational focus away from detection and entirely toward automated continuous system rebuilds?
Man, if the police dispatcher is the sleeper agent, how do you ever trust the radio?
Exactly.
That is a terrifying but necessary question to ask as we look to the future of defense. Thank you all for joining us today on this deep dive. Stay safe out there, keep auditing those defaults, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye, everyone.